Islamic in particular. And looks like tonight I'm the only heretic around. Because what I'm telling you is throw away the damn programming at all. I like to tell you about a computer which doesn't need programming at all. It works, in fact, just like that brain there. I realize that this sounds very incredible, and I don't think you will learn everything I have to say today, so look at the proceedings, and well, if you get lost, just keep on plotting. You will catch up with it. Okay, well, yes, it is true. The brain-like computer has finally arrived. We all expect it to happen sometimes, sooner or later. Science fiction writers have predicted for a long time. Now the future has caught up with us. This computer directly duplicates human brain function. It works essentially the same way as our brain does. It is educated like a human child without any need for programming or supervision of its internal functioning. That sounds incredible, and I wouldn't believe it either in your case, but keep on listening. As I said, it's only a heretical proposal, so you believe it or not, if you see it in the end of this lecture. There's indeed no way for a human being to follow its exact operations or even repair it except for a few steps in the sequence. But in other words, it does it all by itself. It's some kind of, you know, like a brain. Nobody really programs it and nobody really tells it what to do. No wonder neurosurgeons were unable to discover how our brain operates. They were unable to discover the basic equation because they didn't look at the right way. This new technology allows the design of brain-like mechanism, but unlike messy biological system, this computer will have vastly improved speed and reliability. Its memory is essentially unlimited, and it never forgets. All of humanity's present knowledge may be learned by such computers, including every book ever written by man. The intelligent self-learning robot and the truly self-aware computer are only a few years away. This is not science fiction at all. It is present reality. Do not try to put this down as a joke or as a clever programming trick. You owe it to yourself to examine this with an open mind. At worst, you will waste an hour of your time. You will, of course, not learn everything about it in 1 hour. After all, how long did it take you to learn data processing? So don't expect too much. Just get the idea and plant some doubts into your mind. You can the details out of this paper published in the proceedings. I will concentrate on the basic ideas. Well, let's see if this works. Nope, it doesn't. Aha. How do we go about designing a brain-like computer? Many different ways have been proposed in the past. Well, we could design a fancy new device, which we could call Neurista. It has been proposed before. We could mix up a chemical brew and hope that it will somehow spontaneously organize itself. As silly as it sounds, it has been proposed before, and seriously. Or we could stick to that old-fashioned biological method. No, this is not the way at all. We have to re-examine how we build computers and our computing methods. The solution has been right under our very noses all along. We don't need any fancy exotic technology at all. Well, in fact, all we need is really a microprocessor and some memory. And it's simpler than the old data processing. We all know how a data processing computer operates. A set of input instruction from the outside world is massaged in an arithmetic processor under the guidance of a stored program, and then after a while the data is being returned to the outside world. That is data processing the old-fashioned way. We have long realized that this is not the way our brain operates. We do not have a stored program in our brain, and our behavior is different. Let's explore for a moment how a creature with a programmed brain would behave in nature. Well, that's the programmed Frankenstein or whatever. This creature would be born with a completely pre-programmed, pre-wired brain. It could not learn or adapt to different environments. A small defect and the creature would run in circles and die, just like our old-fashioned data processing computers. This is obviously not the way our brain operates. And why have we been building such souped-up addict machines? Well, they're simple, and besides, we didn't know any better. They were quite useful for science and bureaucracy with their rigid equation and rule books, but they will never yield a brain similar to ours. So here comes the future. These are the buzzwords of the new technology, and they will be in your mind for the decades to come. Empirical computation, infinite dimensional networks, knowledge processing, self-aware computer, intelligent self-learning robots, the dawn of the supermind. It sounds more incredible every minute, but you will catch on. It is indeed a completely new computer. This computer is vastly superior to present-day computers, which will go the way of the vacuum tubes. This computer comes just out at the right time. Software costs are skyrocketing, while a microprocessor can be had for a couple of dollars, and megabyte memories, such as Bubble, become available. This new computer essentially organizes itself. It is not programmed, but takes its knowledge from its environment to constantly update itself to different environments. If we stop to consider how it is possible that billions of nerve cells in our brain connect themselves into precise networks, and never mind that nonsense about life force and divine spark, there is some kind of a rule, some kind of algorithm involved which does it all. And that's what I will explain to you today. How can we build a computer with an empty memory device which spontaneously fills itself with precise data to become a self-aware being? How is it possible? Well, I will tell you. But before, I will approach this question from the reverse angle. Instead of telling you how the human brain operates, I will first explore the basic laws and devices to build electronic computers. I will later come back to the brain. I must therefore ask for your patience while I try to teach you some of the very basic theory. I will try to make it as easy as possible. And please don't try to learn it all at once. There is no way to do it in 1 hour. Surprisingly, the story begins with points in space. It is not really three-dimensional space we are talking about, but multidimensional space, and we really talk about a mathematical concept. But how can you explain a mathematical concept? I have to give you something you can see and feel, and something you can understand. The new theory of knowledge processing deals with points in space. You see, unlike mere data processing, knowledge cannot be stored in just a filing rack type array. Knowledge requires some kind of a tree-like array. Knowledge processes is described by 5 basic laws. These laws specify exactly what knowledge is and how it operates. Let us explore them briefly one by one. These laws are as valid for the new computer as they are for our brain. Okay, these are the basic laws of how our brain operates. Law 1. Sounds weirder than it really is. Every concept may be specified like a point in multidimensional space. It is the very basic, and once you understand this law, you understand the whole thing. But in other words, every concept like horse, rose, protein, San Francisco, they're all points in space. And if you can imagine them as points in space, then you can connect them with other space points in space. You can relate them and you can specify them. Exactly how to do this, I will explain later. Okay, a concept is anything we can put a word to, such as objects, persons, machines, or ideas. You see, concepts are hardly ever real. You see, a horse, for example, does not really exist as such. There are brown and black and white horses, big, small, dead, and alive. Nevertheless, the basic idea horse is clear to you without referring to any particular horse. I therefore talk about concepts instead of objects. So when I talk about a horse, I don't really mean any particular horse. I mean the idea horse. And that's what we're working with concepts. Any concept may be envisioned like a point in space which is unique to that concept and which location is precisely known. The horse, therefore, could be imagined as such a point, and any time we think about the horse, we locate it at this point. This point here is unique for the horse. How this is done will become clear later when I describe infinite dimensional networks. If you accept for now that any concept is like a point in space, we can take the next step of relating these points. Law 2. Knowledge is the definition of concepts and their interrelationships. The method we are talking about is knowledge processing, not data processing. What exactly is knowledge? So far, knowledge has been a very nebulous concept. We either have a lot of knowledge or we have little knowledge. But what exactly is knowledge? Unless we know that, we cannot really process knowledge. So knowledge is to determine exactly the point in which a concept resides, the point in space, and also how the concept interrelate. Later you find out that it's pretty much the same thing. But that is exactly knowledge, as defined exactly what it is. To exactly define what a concept is all about and where it is and how it relates. Let's, for example, take a rose. If we know the word rose, we have some knowledge. But if we define it more closely, we gain more knowledge. If I say, the small pink rose blooming in Shakespeare's garden in San Francisco's Golden Gate Park in spring of 1977, I provide much more knowledge than by simply saying a rose. So knowledge is the definition exactly which rose am I talking about, the pink little rose in Golden Gate Park, and so on. And the more closely defined it, the more knowledge we have. As I said, don't try to get it all at once. It's a long way to go. We knit some kind of network of facts, and the more closely this network is knit, the more knowledge we possess. In knowledge processing, as shown in the picture, is locating the points accurately in multidimensional space and defining its relation to other concepts. Okay, the third law. Knowledge is accumulated in discrete quantum increments which change a concept to a different concept. But in other words, a rose is a different thing than a red rose. It's a completely different concept to us. And the difference is red. And red is a quantum increment in our knowledge about the rose. All of a sudden, we not only know it's a rose, we know it's a red rose. So we know something more. And that red is a quantum increment in our knowledge. This law not only defines what knowledge is, but we can now actually measure it. Fortunately, knowledge is also digital. That means we have quantum increments. We don't have analog values here, so it's easy to compute. Well, we do not have a name for a quantum of increment of knowledge yet, but we can now accurately measure it. Imagine graduating from college with so many mega, what's his name, of knowledge, certified. Now you can measure it. Not only is knowledge big or small, it can be measured exactly. This is very fortunate, again. Only a few of the infinitely possible concepts exist in the real world. Every possible concept must, however, have a chance to become real. Fortunately, the world we live in is very limited in its scope. There are only so many colors of a rose. Or take the written English language, for example. An almost infinite number of possible words could be made up from the 26 letters of the alphabet. In fact, there must be millions or billions of words. But only a few thousand of those words really exist in nature, in our real language. So this knowledge processing deals with really existing data, not just imaginary possible data. So when later I come back to the practical computers, don't take out your calculator and calculate how many possible combinations there are and how much possible memory you need. You need only what you actually need, what actually exists. Well, because if it would really be true that all the possible combinations have to be learned, then who could afford an infinite memory anyways? We're happy with a few megabytes. Yeah, this picture shows that a possible concept could be at any one of those intersections. But most positions are empty. Keep in mind, however, that every possible concept must have a chance to become real. In other words, if somebody has a black rose, we have to have a chance of learning it. It must have a way of becoming real. And that's the last and final law. Established knowledge excludes redundant knowledge. It's like learning, well, if we humans are presented with a new fact, like what I'm telling you today, we try to learn it to increase our knowledge. If we find the same fact again, we will recognize but will not learn it again. In other words, when I teach you something once, and I repeat myself right afterwards, you will not store that same thing again. That's unlike data processing, where you keep storing data and data, and it doesn't matter how many times you store it. Knowledge is only stored once. It's like learning to drive a car or to speak a foreign language. We do it only once. A fact once learned must never be learned again. Unless, of course, one has a faulty memory and keeps forgetting. With other words, the new computer will be better at it than we are because it will never forget. Well, if you thought this was hard, you have seen nothing yet. Now we have to go into some nitty-gritty to explain how exactly it is done. And we are almost halfway to the practical system. The infinite dimensional network are the most basic tools to build self-learning computers. This is an infinite dimensional network, a three-dimensional infinite dimensional network, if such thing exists. This mathematical contraption is brand new, and we must try to understand it. It isn't really that difficult to understand once you get the hang of it. A mathematical concept is hard to understand unless one has an analog which we can see and feel. So let's start with something we see and understand. So what we are seeing here and in the next networks is not really existing. It's only something to give you something to think and something to see, to hold on to. The picture shows a three-dimensional network which is used to specify points in one, two, and three-dimensional space. We specify points in one-dimensional space this way, two-dimensional space this way, and three-dimensional space this way. I would have liked to expand it, but you can't illustrate more than three dimensions. As I said earlier, concepts are like positions in space. How then do we define points in space? Well, in this case, we do it with vectors. You see, if we want to specify a point like 3 in space, we say go one step in the first dimension, go four steps in the second dimension, and two steps up, and there you are, on the point 3, which then is exactly defined. And if you go this way, you can define any point in that particular three-dimensional space. Let's look at it from another point of view, which is really the switch in the whole thing. How much knowledge do I need to specify the location of point 3? How much knowledge, which that's what we are talking about, how much knowledge exactly do I need to specify the point 3 in three-dimensional space? And the answer is 3 vectors. We need 3 vectors. 1, 2, 3 vectors. And that's the knowledge we need. So we can measure knowledge. The knowledge of the location of point 3 is determined by these 3 increments in knowledge, or the 3 vectors. If we want to specify a point in only one dimension here, well, we need only one vector. A knowledge quantum is a picture, it's a vector plus some information about the vector origin. You see, if I give you just the vectors here, it would do you no good because you don't know in which dimensions they are. So you also have to know about the vector origin. Those nodes you see here are defined points in space which location is precisely known. We can give them a separate number, so each of this node makes them unique. So once we say this is a point we like to define, then we give it a number and say that's the point in space we like to go at. And it's exactly defined. And it's important that every node has a separate number so we can really keep them apart. Okay, again, I like to emphasize, this is just picture, it's not the real thing. It's just something for you to hold on to. This network here shows this network only arranged in a different ways. Instead of showing the vector in the real physical length, I show them as a so-called gate value. This is called a gate value. And as you can see, it looks almost like a network. And it can spread into further dimensions if required. This network is nice, and I will come back to it later, and we'll use it again, this kind of showing how it's done. But remember, those networks are not assembled by us. They are not programmed. They were built themselves right from the data. Yeah, each node of you see in this defined space is a quantum of knowledge. This is a quantum of knowledge. That's how we increase of knowledge, and that's how we compute with it. It consists of a pointer value, which tells where the node originates or where it comes from, a gate value. The gate value is something like a condition code. You see, if the condition is 6, you advance through this branch. If the condition is 1, you go through there. It's a condition branch or a gate which tells you if you cross that gate to the next node or not. And there's a very important law that even though each node can sprout an unlimited number of branches, each of those branches must be unique. Each gate and each branch must be unique. There may be no two branches with the same gate value in it. Yeah, this tree-like contraption is nice to keep in mind. It will make it easier to understand things later. Just remember, it is just an analog. It does not really exist. It is not something you really have to draw later. Remember that it contains all the information from the previous network, namely from this one here, only more conveniently arranged. Each of the nodes you see is a quantum of knowledge. On the right is the final network, this here. It doesn't really look like a network anymore, but it contains the exact information from the previous two pictures. That's why I had to go through this step and this step to arrive at this step, because nobody can see a network in that kind of thing. Yeah, and we arrived at that last network by simply taking those nodes here, disassembling this network like a jigsaw puzzle, and storing them all according to their address number, namely the node numbers here, in that digital memory there. And all of a sudden, we have knowledge. We have stored knowledge in a computer memory. And it's now very difficult for humans to follow or envision the network. But computers love it this way. The complete network is still intact, and computer can sort them out in lightning speed. This computer is not meant for you. It's meant for the computer. And it's built by computer and manipulated by computer, and humans never really have to bother with it. The great science fiction writer Arthur Clarke predicted these networks accurately in his book 2001, A Space Odyssey. You probably saw the movie which featured a computer named HAL. This is what he said about those networks. In the 1980s, Minsky and Good had shown how neural networks could be generated automatically, self-replicated in accordance with any arbitrary learning program. Artificial brains could be grown by a process strikingly analogous to the development of the human brain. In any given case, the previous precise details would never be known, and even if they were, they would be millions of times too complex for human understanding. This prediction is amazingly accurate. But unusual, it's too conservative. He talked about the 1980s. These are still the 1970s. Okay, this is now the next step. We're going into a practical network and showing you how a learning network is organized and how it is generated, how we can actually simulate the learning process of the human mind. And you'll find it very, very simple indeed. This is organized, and I will explain it to you as a very simple system which answers four questions, namely that a rose is red, that a robot is ready, and IDM is smart, and the idea is good. Well, that's all you can really understand, and it's all that should be illustrated. Remember, this is all done by computers anyways. The input to this particular networks are not vectors anymore, but they are ASCII characters, or letters, just from your teletype. Yeah, and remember that the algorithm over there, which is a learning algorithm, will be executed by a microprocessor. This algorithm will automatically assemble the network We need only to know the algorithm. The step-by-step assembly of the network will be not our concern. This network is a simple learning network which absorbs knowledge very similar to our brain. It is just not just a funny way to store data, but genuine learning. Believe me, it's genuine learning. Learning is here defined as the absorption of new knowledge. Notice that I emphasize new knowledge, because if I tell you something over again, it is not new knowledge, and you don't learn it again. And knowledge is defined, or as I defined earlier, is a definition of concepts and their interrelationships. So I'm afraid in the next 10 minutes or so we have to go into some nitty-gritty steps here, but we will get out of that quickly, I hope. So go ahead if you want to fall asleep. We start from the network entrance at node 0 here, which contains a special stop code. Let's see how the word rose is learned by this network. So in other words, we throw the word rose for the teletype to this network and see how the network learns it. Starting from node 0, we look for a branch containing the letter R, which is the first letter of the word rose. So we start from here and we look around. Is any branch from this network starting with the letter R? And there it is, here. So we advance to node 1. Here at node 1, we look again for a branch with the letter O. That's the second letter of the word rose. And we advance to node 2, because that's the only node which exists. But there could be many, many branches on that particular node. If we keep on going for the whole word rose, we finally arrive at node 4. This node 4 totally identifies the word rose. If we follow the same steps again from the beginning, we'll again end up at point 4. So point 4 is that magic point in infinite dimensional space, which means exactly rose. And that's exactly where it points to. Well, that's how we follow an already established trail. So that's something which, in other words, we knew the word rose before that, and now we, how's about a new knowledge? How's about if we want to learn a new word, like idea? So we feed in a new idea, the word idea, and we go this step here, I-D-E-A. But when we come to this point and we are looking for a branch which has an E in it, with a gate E in it, we cannot find it. So we simply create it. That way, the memory will fill itself with data and load itself up with a precise network. The network will expand itself and learn new knowledge automatically. Let's look at the flowchart now. We wait for an input character to come in from the outside world. When the input character arrives, we look if it's an end of sequence, such as a full stop, a comma, a semicolon, or a space, which tells us that the word is finished. If it's not finished, then we put this into a so-called gate value here in a register. And we set the pointer value to 0. The pointer value is that address 0 where we start from. Then, after we have this what I call the matrix, we scan through the memory to locate the matching matrix. We scan through the memory to see if we can find a matrix for rows, for example, a matrix containing a 0, a pointer 0, and a gate R. If we find that in the matrix here, a pointer 0 and a gate R, which we find in here, in the memory. If we find it, then we take this address where we found it, and put it into the pointer in the matrix there. We locate the matrix and we put the pointer into the pointer value and we go back and wait for the next character. Once the next character arrives, we go through the whole sequence again. And so with this little micro routine, this little algorithm, we can store a whole word. And when finally we detect the end of the sequence, we have a pointer number, just one number for the whole word. And that pointer number is independent, is always a single number, always a single address pointer here. It's like the end of this network. And that pointer is a single number, no matter if the word is just as easy as rose or supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Doesn't make no difference. So with other words, this network learns. It expands itself and it encounters new data. It recognizes what it has already seen before. And it expands itself indefinitely. It just fills up the memory locations that way. The step-by-step procedure, you really have to go by yourself and do it once. You will see it's not even that difficult. Every word